WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the documentary film Promises, we meet four Israeli and three Palestinian children, and we see the Middle East crisis through their eyes. In a New York Times review, Julie Salomon wrote, "The film illustrates the uneasy convergence of history and modernity, fanaticism and reasonableness." The movie was shown on the PBS series POV and is now screening in many theaters around the country. My guests are two of the film's directors, Justine Shapiro, and Beezy Goldberg, who was born in America but lived in Israel from the age of 7 until his 20s. He's often on camera talking with the children. The children were chosen to represent a cross-section of the Middle East. Yarko and Danielle are twins who are secular Israelis. Shlomo is an ultra-Orthodox Jew, and Mushi is a right-wing Jewish settler. Mahmoud lives in the Muslim quarter of Jerusalem and is a supporter of Hamas. Sanabel and Faraj are Palestinian refugees living in a refugee camp. During the course of the film, the Israeli twins and the two Palestinian refugees meet at the camp. The film was shot between 1997 and 2000 during a comparatively peaceful time, but the filmmakers have remained in touch with most of the children during the current upheaval. Justine Shapiro says that they focused on children ages 9 to 13 for a reason.
We saw kids doing what adults and politicians never do. I mean, for example, one of the boys in the film, Faraj, a Palestinian boy, he's adamantly against meeting the Israelis. But after being somewhat cajoled and convinced by Sanabel, another Palestinian refugee, and after seeing Polaroid photographs of the two Israeli twins, Faraj changes his mind. And this is a really big thing. It's so rare that we see politicians change their mind and say, you know what, I'm going to try this. I said I wasn't, but I am going to try this. And Faraj, you know, in the middle of a conversation with him, surprised us and asked us for the phone number of the twins and called them up and invites them to the camp. You know, the children are sponges of their environments, but they're also still malleable. They're still at that age where curiosity, in a way, is even a stronger force than the rhetoric and the dogma that they grow up with.
BC, I want to ask you about one of the moments in the film where you're on camera talking to one of the Palestinian kids, and you're obviously really close. You could just see the chemistry on screen, and he's kind of leaning his elbow on your knee. And he's explaining that he really hates all Israelis, and when he sees an Israeli, or maybe he says when he sees a Jew, he wants to throw a rock at them. Then you explain to him something that he apparently doesn't know, which is that you're part Israeli, you lived in Israel a lot of your life, and you're Jewish. Describe what happens when he hears that from you.
Well, I was sitting with Mahmoud, who is an avid supporter of Hamas and Hezbollah, and to most Israeli kids, Palestinian means rock thrower, terrorist, at best construction worker or busboy. To Palestinian kids, Jew means Israeli, means soldier, oppressor, settler, occupier, full stop, that's it. So I'm sitting there with Mahmoud. The funny thing was, it was actually the third time we'd had this conversation. He was just in such deep denial. He couldn't accept the possibility that I was Jewish, because a Jewish person to him is someone who occupies his land and oppresses him. And he wouldn't accept it. He said, "You're not an authentic Jew. You're one of those American Jews. You're not a real Jew." And I kept insisting, "No, I actually am an authentic Jew. And I grew up here. My family is here." And he wouldn't accept it. You know, he just would not. I mean, he's sitting there telling me how he wants to kill Jews, how he wants to basically, you know, help create suicide bombs and blow up as many Jews as possible so that there'll be fewer. But won't accept the fact that I am actually a real authentic Jew, Yehudi Asli, as they say in Arabic. And funny thing was, even after that conversation, 2 years later, I stood in his father's coffee store in the Old City, and he said, "You know, I've been meaning to ask you a question. Are you a Christian or a Muslim?" And his little brother stood from the side trying to mouth the words, Jew, he's an American Jew. And it took years for Mahmoud to realize. It was actually not till Mahmoud sat in a theater in West Jerusalem, he was one of four Arabs in an audience of about 400 Israelis, and watched the film and then saw a question and answer session. And afterwards, he came up and he said, Now that I've seen you do a question and answer thing in Hebrew, I realize you must be an authentic Jew.
Well, how did it affect your feelings about him? I mean, you're trying to get really close to these kids, and it sounds like you really succeeded. But here's this kid who, I mean, clearly, he's making an exception by having a relationship with you. I mean, he really thinks he hates all Jews. Is it easy to be friendly to like a kid who has that attitude?
I think that the conflict really isn't Jewish-Palestinian. It's really a conflict between Palestinians and Israelis.
Yeah, definitely. Just to add to this complexity that gets created, Palestinians refer to Israelis as Jews. They don't actually mean the people in the United States. It's just something that's kind of become part of the vernacular. When we did this interview with Mahmoud, I mean, the truth was I wanted to choke him. I actually had to sit on my hands because they kept moving towards his throat, because he talks about, you know, we need to kill as many Jews as possible. And I would say, Mahmoud, listen, you know, when those buses blow up, sometimes there are Palestinians on the buses too. And every time I said anything, he had something from the Quran to back up his position. He said, oh no, the Palestinians go directly to heaven, but the Jews go directly to hell, which, you know, made me again want to choke him. Yet Justine and I and Carlos had decided really, really early on in the process of making the film that the governing principle behind this film could not possibly be justice, that some idea of ours, some artificial idea of what justice is, was not going to work in making this film, because then we would just come out with some kind of biased to one side or another propaganda film. We decided that awareness and curiosity were much more important to us. So therefore, when Mahmoud talked about killing as many Jews as possible, we would ask him questions like, well, how? You know, what kinds of explosives will you use? And do you pack nails in with them? Or how would you do that, to try and get deep under the surface and understand? So this was one case. This was the case where I had to exercise the most restraint. And it wasn't so much because of his views, because we had heard these kinds of views from a lot of kids. It was really because so much of Mahmoud's point of view was coming from a place of dogma. No, the kids in the refugee camp, they really have a lot of day-to-day experience. And also there was openness when we spoke to them. They were willing to consider talking to Israeli kids. They were willing to consider that killing Israelis might not be a good idea. With Mahmoud, every line that came out of him was Quranic verse, and it was all kind of, it was so dogmatic that there was nowhere to go with conversation. So in that case, I really had to restrain myself and sort of, you know, go hit the wall when we left the house.
And I should say, some distortion of Quranic verse.
Yeah, definitely.
So you started working on the film in 95. Mm-hmm. Most of the taping in the movie was done in 97 and 98.
Right.
And then 2 years later, you contacted the children again. That was in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. And you've been in touch with some of them since 2000. What are some of the most dramatic ways in which some of the children have changed since you first met them?
Well, the really amazing experience was recently being with Sanaa Bill, the Palestinian refugee from the Dehesha refugee camp, and Yarko and Danielle, the Israeli twins, when they came out to Los Angeles in March. And
this was for the Academy Awards.
For the Academy Awards. And it was really interesting to see Sanaa Bill change over the years. When we met her in 1997, her father had been held in prison for 2 years in administrative detention without trial. Sanaa Bill hadn't seen her father for those 2 years, and for pretty much half of her life, he'd been in and out of prison. He's a journalist with the PFLP. But even at that time, she was so curious and so open to the idea of meeting these Israelis and being with us and sharing her thoughts and her feelings, and she really defied my own stereotype of the, you know, Palestinian Muslim girl. I mean, she's growing up in a family where, you know, discussion and communication is really important. And but then when the recent intifada started in September of 2000, Sanaa Bill started to feel really isolated because in her mind, all Israelis were against the Palestinian people, and she didn't have contact with any Israelis. And she became very angry, and like many, many kids living in the refugee camps, she felt that, you know, suicide bombings were a viable solution and justified it, you know, as a measure of hopelessness. Well, when we told her that we were nominated for an Academy Award, we wanted to know if she'd be willing to come out and if she'd be willing to be with Yarko and Danielle. And our idea was that if we were to win, we wanted Sanabel and one of the Israeli twins to go on stage and accept the award and say something, from their heart and hopefully for peace. And Sanabel said, well, I'll come to the Academy Awards, but I'm not going to stand on stage with an Israeli. Well, they met in the Amsterdam airport, and it was a very long flight. And during the course of the flight, they played sort of musical chairs, and they ended up sitting next to each other, and they ended up connecting with each other. And when the flight was delayed in Dallas, Delta didn't give anybody hotel rooms. They were all made to sleep on the lounge in the Dallas airport, and they created what they called the first Palestinian-Israeli refugee camp. And all the two Palestinian, because Sanabel came with a Palestinian girlfriend, the two Palestinian girls, Yarko and Danielle, the two Israeli boys, and their mother were all asleep there and hanging out in this, Palestinian-Israeli refugee camp, as they called it. And then they spent this week together in Los Angeles, and Sanabel really changed. She felt so supported by Yarko and Danielle, and she started to talk about peace and very future thinking and positive and hopeful. And it was a real transformation. And what I saw in that was that as long as she felt isolated, she became more angry and hopeless. But when she felt connected, she, felt more hopeful. And now they're in regular email contact with Yarko and Danielle.
There was, Sanabel had no idea, she told us. She said, I didn't know that there were any Israelis who would stand by my side. I thought that the entire Israeli population was behind Sharon. I didn't think that anybody would support me. And the twins, on the other hand, had absolutely no idea what Sanabel's life was like. On a day-to-day basis. And so they really had to tackle some really serious issues while we were together in Los Angeles. There were moments where they said, okay, all the grown-ups out of the room, we need to talk for a while. And they would talk about things like the Palestinian right of return, like the settlements, like the nature of a Palestinian state, like Israeli security. They really wanted to get down and dirty and try and understand what the other side felt and to think about what possible solutions were. And their lives have been changed by this in a very dramatic way, in that they are both have gone back to their to their communities. Actually, the girls just went back yesterday. They'd been stranded here because they couldn't get in. Israel wasn't letting Palestinians in over the Jordanian bridge, but they just went back, and they're going to have to stand up in their communities and say, there actually are Israelis who are who can support us and with whom it's worth having a meaningful conversation. I know that the twins are having a hard time with their friends because a lot of people are so anti-Palestinian, and Yarko and Danielle are standing up and saying, they're not all horrible. They actually want coexistence. What they want is very, very simple. And I think that Sanabel and Kian, her friend who traveled here with her, are going to have even a harder time because they've actually been shunned a little bit by, they've gotten some emails saying that they're betraying the Palestinian cause because they're meeting with Israelis outside of the country, and nobody should meet with Israelis because that puts out some kind of message of normalization, as if everything is cool. There's this idea in the Palestinian community that Israelis and Palestinians should not meet because that portrays the situation as solved. And, I asked Sanabel a couple of days ago if she would be interested in going, if she could get across the checkpoint, if she would be interested in going to a peace rally, because there have been these big peace demonstrations in Tel Aviv with the twins. And she said, I would die to go. I would love to go to a peace rally, and I couldn't possibly do it because the community. What will people say when I come back if someone finds out that I went to Israel, that I was at a demonstration with two Israeli boys? It would just be horrible for me.
Do you know if any of the Israeli kids had friends who were killed in the recent suicide bombings, or if any of the Palestinian kids had friends from the neighborhood who were among the suicide bombers?
As far as I know, none of the Israeli kids have immediate friends who were killed recently. Moshe does have a friend who was killed, back in 97, the end of 97. Although his settlement has been fired on repeatedly by the local, Palestinian villages. But the Palestinian kids in the refugee camp do have some friends who were killed. There was a young boy who was killed there in November who was of Sanabel's age.
Mm-hmm.
And more recently, a girl who was a few years older than Sanabel and lived, you know, a few minutes away from her house, was the girl who killed herself in Jerusalem, the first teenager who was a suicide bomber.
My guests are Justine Shapiro and BZ Goldberg, directors of the documentary Promises. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are BZ Goldberg and Justine Shapiro. They're co-directors of the new movie Promises. And it's a documentary about the conflict in the Middle East as seen through the eyes of Palestinian and Israeli children from the ages of about 9 to 14. BZ, I know during the Intifada you were... During the first Intifada, you were an Israeli journalist covering the Intifada. So a lot of your experiences then with Palestinian children were probably watching them throw rocks. Was it easy to get to know any individuals when you were covering the Intifada? Did you have a sense of who the people were who were throwing rocks and what their motivation was? I mean, do you see the children differently now as a filmmaker than you did as a journalist during the Intifada?
Well, during the Intifada, I worked mostly as a sound man actually for foreign networks. I was I worked a lot for CNN and for NBC and for Reuters. I didn't do that much work for the Israeli media, and we didn't get to know people. In fact, you know, the longest amount of time I got to spend with any one person was 15, 20 minutes or a half an hour interview, and the closest I got to kids who were throwing rocks were the kids who were throwing rocks at me.
Mm-hmm.
So, this was the first time that we were able to really meet kids and on both sides, actually, because I had also never made personal relationships with settlers, for example. I came from a community in Israel. You know, people thought I was nuts when I was going to the refugee camp. People would say, "You're going to the refugee camp? What did you lose there?" But they really thought I was crazy for going to the settlement. You know, the settlers are considered by kind of my social set in Israel to be lunatics, to be crazy. So I didn't know any settlers. And for, you know, Justine and Carlos and I, it was such an incredibly enriching experience that we could meet people on all sides of this very, very complicated conflict and really get to know them and get to kind of, you know, feel what their life feels like and see what their houses are like and see in what ways they're really similar to each other and the music that they listen to and the ways in which they're so, so utterly different.
The Israeli twins who we've talked about, there's a part in the movie where they explain that they really don't want to go in the military. They don't want to have to kill people. You even have them talking to a wounded Israeli soldier who says, well, sometimes you have to fight. Those twins are closer to military age now. How do they feel about having to go into the military soon?
Both Yarko and Danielle are avid volleyball players, and their dream is to be national volleyball stars, in which they'll have to do some kind of quick form of basic training and not spend that much time in the army. And they have said that they don't want to serve, they would rather not serve in combat units because they don't want to have to end up serving in the occupied territories. Danielle is not 100% sure, and Yarko felt that for sure. He in fact said, if I was, you know, forced to serve in the territories or fire at a refugee camp, I would prefer to run away and risk being in jail.
How soon do they actually face this decision?
Just under a year and a half. Right now, what they told me is that the thing that's standing between them and kind of being volleyball stars is they have to grow 3 inches. So they're trying to eat all the foods that they've been told will make them grow faster.
BZ, what about you? Your family has lived both in the United States and in Israel. Do you debate what Israel's political position should be in the conflict a lot in your family?
Most of the debate I have actually is with my immediate family in Israel. And, you know, like any good Israelis, we debate just about anything and everything having to do with politics. And my family is living in Israel. And the truth is that their concern, their day-to-day concern, is much more focused on issues of security and their own feelings of safety. So, yes, I have had definitely conversations and people who are friends and family who have asked, well, why are you doing this? Really, do the people outside of Israel really need to know all this? It's not going to be good for Israel. And also sometimes people, you know, come up with these ideas, for example, that the reason Palestinians hate Israelis is because they're being educated that way in school. And having been there and having been to the schools, I know that that's the case in some of the schools, but in some of the schools, that's really not the case. And you know, sadly, in the last 20 months or so, it's the Israelis who are educating the Palestinians towards hatred, in my estimation. So yeah, I do end up having arguments and fights, and a lot of the time it's actually easier not to speak politics because, you know, positions are so firm. You know, like an Israeli novelist once said, it's actually easier in Israel to change your gender than to change your political point of view.
Bizi Goldberg and Justine Shapiro directed the documentary Promises. It's currently playing in theaters in several cities and will open in more cities in the weeks to come. We'll talk more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Bizi Goldberg and Justine Shapiro, two of the directors of the documentary Promises, a film that looks at the Middle East crisis through the eyes of Palestinian and Israeli children. Your film is so much about how children's politics in the Middle East are shaped and how their views of Israelis and Palestinians are shaped. Bizi, you grew up in Israel from the age of 7 through your 20s. Did you have any friends as a child who were Palestinian?
No, I didn't. And, you know, most Israeli children don't. I grew up in this pretty liberal, progressive family. And at the same time, there was this background message from the community of, went sort of like this, there are good Arabs and there are bad Arabs. The good Arabs are dead Arabs. So no, I didn't have any Palestinian friends when I was growing up.
And did you have any friends who were killed by Palestinians when you were growing up?
I did. When I was 14, the kid I sat next to in school, a kid named Imri, was killed in an incident on Israel's coastal road. There was an attack there. And you know, I remember the day after he was killed being at school with a group of my friends and trying to figure out. We got together at recess. The teachers actually insisted that we continue studying as normal. But at recess, we got together and tried to figure out what we could do, as if there's something that we could do. And I remembered we decided that the only thing we could do is to take revenge. And the janitor in the school had a son who was mentally handicapped, and we decided that he would be, you know, fair game, that we could kill this kid, and that would feel good, that the feeling of revenge would make us feel a little bit more peace. And then, I mean, we were 14 years old, and the bell rang, and we had to go in from recess, and we didn't get around to it. But I remember that feeling. That actually is one of the things that has helped me understand some of the kind of, seemingly illogical rage that comes when people have lost friends and family on both sides of the conflict.
Did you think at that time that you would be capable of being one of the killers seeking revenge?
Oh, totally. I mean, we were sitting there together, and all of us were sort of planning how we were going to kill this kid. There were other moments, you know, when I was working in the West Bank. There was one time where a rock went through my front window and hit me in the eye, and I remember feeling such murderous rage for a moment that I know that if the kid was in front of me who did this and I had a gun, I feel like I would have killed him. I was feeling so angry, and feeling like that kind of revenge would make me feel good. But it's this, you know, momentary thing, and it goes away after a minute or two, and you know, what's useful about it for me is understanding how someone could feel so rageful and so vengeful. Not condoning it, but really understanding how a human being could feel that way.
Have you screened the movie for Israelis and for Palestinians?
The film actually showed in Israel. It was in theaters for a few months in the three big cities in Israel, and it was at the film festival in Jerusalem. And was on television a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. The response from Israelis has been overwhelmingly warm. We originally made the film thinking about an American audience, a European audience, and tried to make it, you know, very accessible and basic in its approach to history and politics. But so many Israelis have said to us, you know, I really didn't know about this particular part of Palestinian lives. And people have said, you've really opened my mind, and I'm thinking about the conflict in a different way. The Palestinian Authority won't allow a film like this. Actually, none of the Arab states at this point would allow a film like this to be screened on TV or in theaters because of this issue of normalization. You know, in the film, Israelis and Palestinians meet, and this is considered not to be a ripe time for these kinds of meetings. So the film can't be screened officially. However, when the film screened on Israeli television, the Palestinians were able to see it on, on TV. And when the Academy Awards came around, the Palestinian community, nobody even knew what the Academy Awards were in the refugee camp. But we heard that, thousands of families in the refugee camp stayed up in the middle of the night to see and watch and wait for the film to win, hoping to see Sanabel take the stage. The film is being circulated in the way that a lot of banned films get around in the Arab world, which is videotapes. People make copies of videotapes, and we're actually working right now on getting a good Arabic translation of the film so that we can make a high quality master to make the best possible bootleg tapes to circulate in the Arab world. Mahmoud, the blonde haired kid from Jerusalem, actually came to the screening I mentioned in the
This is the kid
film.
Who wants to join Hamas.
This is the kid who is supportive of Hamas. He actually said, "I am not part of Hamas, but right. I support them." He made that distinction. He came to the screening, and I was worried about him. I was worried that, here he is saying that he wants to kill Jews, and he's sitting in an audience of 400 Jews, and I was thinking, what's going to happen? Is someone going to get angry at him? And somehow I felt that it was okay, and at the end of the screening, I said, "I'd like to tell you that there's someone here from the film." Mahmoud has been, his political point of views and mine often don't agree, and oftentimes we get into fights, but I really admire his courage at speaking his mind, during times when not a lot of people were speaking their mind. And today I admire his courage because he's come here to West Jerusalem to sit in this theater with 400 Israelis. And I think that takes a lot of courage. And at that point, Mahmoud stood up, and he got this rousing ovation. And Mahmoud came to me after the screening and said, "I didn't know that there were Israelis like this. I thought all the Israelis were soldiers and settlers. I really didn't know that there were people who would appreciate me in this way." So, it affected him. And what we're hearing from the Palestinian community is a lot of support for the film. In the refugee camp, some people have spoken out against Sanabel and Faraj, the two refugee kids in the film, and said they're traitors because they met with Israeli kids. But most of what we've gotten is very, very positive. The Palestinians feel like the film is, they say, "Well, it's a good film, but it's a little pro-Israeli." And the Israelis have said, "Well, this is a good film, but it's a little pro-Palestinian." So we feel like we must have done something right.
What about the children themselves? What do they think of your movie?
They all can't understand why they're not in it more. I mean, we shot close to 200 hours of footage, so you can imagine how much we ended up editing.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Justine Shapiro and BZ Goldberg directed the documentary Promises, along with Carlos Bellotto. It's continuing to open in theaters around the country. Promises is also available for educational distribution. This is Fresh Air.